All right. Thank you for attending session 167, titled The Mesa Easter Pageant and the Future of the LDS Church. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. We encourage you also to also purchase other Sunstone merchandise or other or to make a donation to Sunstone to help support these amazing events. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework. The Mesa Easter Pageant is an annual passion play of the life of Christ on the grounds of the Mesa, Arizona Temple with the distinctive LDS flavor. During its two-week run-up to Easter, the pageant attracts up to 15,000 people every night. It features a live cast of 500 local people and is one of the few pageants that will be continued even after Manti and others are ended. It is a community event that attracts the Christian community in Phoenix, as the elements in the event have become more mainstream Christian over time. Brian Simper is an active member of his ward and serves in the Young Men's Presidency. He is an Arizona native and served a full-time mission in Alberta, Canada. Most of his time, he manages network security for financial firms. He is married and has four children. We will now turn the time over to the presentation.
Hello, do I have am I missing a microphone?
Oh. Let's see, do you want to use this one?
If it'll fit up here somewhere. That, or we can just put this guy out.
Whatever you want to use.
Yeah, sure. This is great. That would be probably better. Okay, hello. I am Brian Simper, and this is on the Mesa Easter Pageant and its present and future. Normally, I'm found looking at network traffic on large financial firms, telling people to stop trying to break into their website. And on Sunday, usually teaching inappropriate object lessons to the priest quorum. I am married, and I have a number of children and a daughter who is married to her dear girlfriend. So some of the best parts of the LDS Church were started by members in a grassroots effort. Family Home Evening was started in Richfield, Utah, Institute at the University of Idaho. Early Morning Seminary was started by a stake president in Pasadena, California. In each of these cases and many more, the LDS leadership heard about these programs and pushed them church-wide. This is, in many ways, how the pageant started. Hill Cumorah pageant was started in Palmyra, in New York, in 1937. Chorley, England has had a pageant about LDS missions for a long time. Manti covers a broad history of the church in the Book of Mormon. It was started in 1967. The LDS Church took over many of the pageants in the 60s and started providing institutional support as well as lights and sound. The Mesa Easter Pageant was started as a sunrise service, and it originally was done on a flatbed trailer. It has since expanded quite a bit into the large production with an enormous stage. It has 10 official performances over 2 weeks, and crowds are consistently from 10 to 15,000 each night. It is well attended by the local Catholic and Protestant communities in town. The full name is the Mesa Arizona Easter Pageant, Jesus the Christ. In addition to the performances, the practices are effectively open to the public. Crowds start to build each evening during the week, even before the official performances start. Total attendance is estimated to be around 125,000 visitors over the 2 weeks of the pageant. The pageant actually starts out in Jerusalem as a street scene as a Roman guard stops a Christian woman asking about Jesus. He says that he was on Golgotha when Jesus was crucified. The pageant narrative is this woman telling this Roman soldier about the life and mission of Jesus. So let's give the authors a little bit break here. This is a Sunday school lesson written in the late 20th century, so this is not full of scholarly exegesis. It's about how modern Christians deal with their faith, in particular Mormons, how they translate the life of Christ into their own faith. It is mostly text from the King James Version of the Bible with a few LDS scriptures added for doctrinal support. Ironically, the first scriptures quoted in the Easter pageant are from the Pearl of Great Price in the Book of Abraham, and Abraham chapter 4 and Moses chapter 5. LDS doctrine is heavily focused on the fall of Adam leading to the atonement. The creation and fall narratives in the Pearl of Great Price provide a more LDS-centric view of why Adam's fall was necessary and as it leads to the mission and the life of Jesus. The fall of Adam is shown really generically. We don't get the role of Lucifer and much about the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Adam and Eve are not really called out as sinners, barely as transgressors, and they keep the scene as simple as possible. Next we have Isaiah chapter 53, where Isaiah is preaching about the future Messiah. A few bars from Handel's Messiah do play in the background of the scene from "For unto us a child is born." Next we go to the nativity scene. This is all done in Luke chapter 2 that virtually any Christian family would expect to read from on Christmas Eve. Now, the book of Matthew does get a nod here because we also have the three kings and the three wise men show up to the birth. Luke chapter 2 also continues with the narrative of Jesus as a 12-year-old boy at the temple. This is unfortunately the only real story we get from the childhood of Jesus. I don't think the stories from the infancy gospel of Thomas would probably not go over too well in the pageant. But next, definitely, we have the baptism of Jesus. The LDS authors of the pageant have inserted 2 Nephi chapter 31, which is a scripture that any missionary would recognize about how Jesus was baptized. So, of course, we need to be baptized also. So Luke has a number of scenes. The pageant, as I said, pulls from the King James Version of the Bible. And these are the scenes that Luke gets on the various aspects of the life of Christ. Matthew was known to be concerned about prophecies and Jewish customs, and his book gets calling the apostles, the Judas conspiracy, lamenting over Jerusalem, and then the Garden of Gethsemane, the betrayal, several others. In the book of John, Jesus is the divine Messiah from the very beginning of time. John's gospel provides the story about healing a blind man, the woman taken in adultery, another part of the crucifixion, and the appearance of the sepulcher. The book of Mark only gets one single scriptural reference, and this is where Jesus is prophesying about his soon-to-be-experienced death. And then the book of Acts, at the very end, we have Peter testifying of living prophets. There is, at that time, the narrator goes over, hey, we have living prophets today also. They don't mention any scriptures in that, but it's heavily implied that, hey, you should probably talk to one of those missionaries about this. There are a couple of scriptures in the Book of Mormon and Pearl of Great Price, and these are them. The creation stories in Abraham and Moses are big. Adam and Eve sacrificing shows up, and then the baptism of Jesus. Now, I think as we all know, the resurrection of Jesus is the foundational event in Christianity. When the story of the resurrection is told in Sunday school, these are the major events that get covered. But they're all pulled from different books of Scripture. We see the women see the stone rolled away. Mary sees two angels. Mary sees the risen Jesus. Touch me not. The women tell the disciples. Peter runs the sepulcher, and then Jesus appears to the 11 disciples. And this from all over the first couple of books of the New Testament. It's not told in one single narrative in there. And unfortunately, we don't get to include a number of really great stories like the woman that washes Jesus' feet, which is actually in all four of the Gospels, the meeting Jesus on the road to Emmaus. Largely, they were cut for time because they want the pageant to only be about an hour. So, pageant tryouts. You want to be in the Mesa Easter pageant. Every October, around 1,000 local people will try out for about 500 Easter pageant roles at a local stake center. You get your picture taken, and they do a group tryout in front of the directors. The dialogue is pre-recorded, so you don't need to worry about memorizing anything. But the actual tryout is having the directors tell you a scene, describe it for you, and you have to pantomime it, act how you would act on stage. They want to see some dramatic movements and facial expressions, which can be seen from the audience in the crowd. So you can try out as a family group. They will accept children, gladly accept children, particularly because one of the scenes is Jesus and the children. Families are kept together as much as possible. They need small children. They'll happily accept babies. This is actually considered a calling in your ward. You're actually told to go tell your bishop and be set apart as a pageant missionary. By early December, the final cast list is sent out over email. The actors playing Jesus have already been chosen a couple of weeks before and are starting to prepare for that role, but everyone else gets to find out just in time for Christmas. So finally, this is your month before Easter if you're in the pageant. It pretty much is going to dominate the entire month before Easter. You do get family home evening off and Sundays free. But other than that, every other evening you're going to be at the pageant. There are three big crowd scenes, and these are what is practiced on this first Saturday. It's called Super Saturday, mainly because you're going to be there a super long time, and you're going to practice getting 500 people on and off the stage in an efficient manner. This is the stage itself. It's enormous, and there are 9 different entrances onto the stage, and you'll get assigned to come on them for all the big scenes, the triumphal entry and healing and teaching and the finale. In the finale, you actually learn a song. Luckily, the only lyrics are, "I know he lives," so it's pretty easy to memorize. On Super Saturday, this is Phoenix. I know it's maybe March, maybe as late as April, usually March. It's going to be hot, so they tell you literally bring your tents. It'll be a little tent city on the lawn in front where all the chairs are currently there. At that time, they've already had heavy equipment come in and put in the 4 big light towers. So this is the scene where Jesus confronts the woman taken in adultery. The other major activity on Super Saturday is handing out your costume. This is a big part of the Easter pageant. We have here a crowd of Jewish peasants who somehow had access to a 20th century Joann's fabric and craft store. But of course, the Mesa Easter pageant is a lesson in the modern ideals of Jesus Christ. It's not about first century rough-spun clothing or authentic dialogue. I mean, the dialogue is in English, not in Aramaic or Greek. Every cast member gets a robe, an overcoat, a belt, and a hat. You're supposed to supply your own sandals, and your costume you have, you get to hang on to it for a month. The costumes do not have any pockets. They do give you these cloth bags you can attach to the belt for rings and watches and glasses and even cell phones, which they actually prefer you don't bring at all. It turns out if you have a cell phone in your backstage, you can actually see the glow of the cell phones themselves from the audience. It's pretty wild. This is a family who is out visiting the crowd before the performance, which you're encouraged to do. I have a friend who appeared in the opening street scene every evening, and I was familiar with the outfit she wears because you get used to it. You wear it just about every day. But one night she showed up in a brand new outfit. I asked her, "Why did you get a new outfit?" She says she was out there with a sheep, just like you see there. This was a brand new lamb. It got excited, as small as children do, and it completely urinated and pooped all over the front of her costume. This would have been a very authentic look for first century Judea, but it's not the look we were hoping to have for the Easter pageant. So the costume department has plenty of spares, and they make sure those are provided. This picture also shows the last part of your costume, and you can see the gentleman there on the right. He's wearing a badge, much like this. That's your security badge to get backstage. They have a security detail. They take their job very seriously. They've got 500 people dressed in weird outfits. They're trying to only let those guys backstage. I have not heard any actual security incidents that have occurred, but they do give them some special training. I was actually politely requested to not talk about that in detail because they don't want to give any ideas to a bunch of apostates here. You know. All right. So most weeks you show up at about 6:30 p.m. You have a devotional, and it's with an opening song, prayer, special musical number, and a talk. The director will add in notes for things they want you to do for the upcoming evening. It also guarantees that it's very hard to be late for the performance because you've got to be there an hour and a half, 2 hours early. Around 7 p.m., you're released from the devotional and you head to the lawn of the temple where the crowds have been gathering and you're encouraged to go out and talk to people. That's actually kind of fun. This is a missionary outreach first and foremost, of course. Okay, that is me, the tall guy in the back. And I got to wear this awesome outfit because I was a Sadducee a couple years. Men are encouraged to grow a beard for the pageant. It's not required. And there are a couple parts, however, that do require a beard. Sadducee is one of them. Jesus, of course, has to have a beard. Most of the disciples are required to have a beard. Actually, the Apostle John is not. He's allowed to be a young man, so they say, you know, young man, you can be clean shaven. Women don't have any direction on their hair because you're all basically wearing a hijab, covering their hair. And you've seen it in other pictures. It'll be in every other picture. Like the angels, Eve, women taking adultery, they're not wearing the hair covering, but everyone else is. They say you can do whatever you want with your hair because no one's going to see it. Even baby girls get hair covering. But there, luckily, there are some seriously epic beards on the men. There's one friend of mine who has, he's got a ZZ Top big old beard, and he's played a Pharisee for years because he loves doing it, and he looks exactly the part. Stage beards are available for actors who cannot grow a beard for whatever reason. This year when I was a Sadducee, one of the guys who actually is not shown here, he was the head Pharisee, and he had a beard applied every evening. And I asked Bill, why don't you just grow a beard? I mean, I haven't shaved since January, man. He said, I'm not allowed because it's a condition of my employment I not have a beard. He was a maintenance worker for the Mesa, Arizona temple itself. And he said, I went to the temple president and asked if I could grow a beard. And he says, no, it's a requirement for employment. You can't have a beard. And I commented, well, you're saying that an actual Pharisee told a fake Pharisee that he can't grow a beard for the preeminent missionary outreach for the church. Bill did not think this was funny, but I did. All right, let's talk about the central character. It's Jesus, obviously. There are a couple of requirements for Jesus. First of all, they want a man of approximately the right age. He needs to be 5'10" to fit the costume. Darker hair is preferred, but they'll do stage beards. And we had one guy named Tyler who did it for a couple years who was nearly blonde. He did a good job. Cast members are encouraged to go out and meet the crowd. Jesus is not encouraged to go out and meet the crowd because he would be mobbed and his robe would no longer be white, I'm sure. There are, in fact, 7 total people who play Jesus during the pageant. First, there are always 2 men called as Jesus. They alternate nights. You need another study because you can get by with missing lots of other cast members, but you know, not Jesus. The other 5 Jesuses, Jesi, what's the plural is Jesus? They're only for individual scenes. So first, there's baptized Jesus. Jesus is baptized by immersion. And, I'll talk about this in a few minutes, but he's fully immersed. But there's a different actor that plays Jesus who gets baptized so that main Jesus can be dry for the next scene. Right. Then there's crucified Jesus. Getting out of that outfit and off that contraption takes a few minutes. So while crucified Jesus is here, main Jesus is getting ready for the resurrection. The next one is during the 10 virgin dance, there's a guy playing the bridegroom who's essentially Jesus who has to show up because main Jesus himself is teaching off to the side of the stage. There's boy Jesus. This is usually a 12-year-old young man with his actual parents who play Jesus at the temple. And then there's baby Jesus. This one gets a special mention because the directors always go for an actual, authentic, newborn baby. This means there are literally, in October, second trimester pregnant women trying out for the role of baby Jesus, saying, hey, I will be delivering right on time. They always line up a couple women because you never know who's going to go along. I had a cousin who was scheduled to have her baby, but he was born a few days too late. It wasn't going to work out. So they always have a few babies lined up. We have, in fact, had a baby girl portray Jesus. I mean, we don't do the circumcision of Jesus, so that would be a problem. But the baby girl was simply born at the right time, and she was the granddaughter of the costume director. Perhaps ordained women would like to meet this female Messiah who is now 6 years old and attending primary in Mesa. So the play is entirely recorded. Spoken dialogue and songs are broadcast through an enormous sound system the church owns. This is accompanied by hundreds of lights. The church owns a huge 18-wheel tractor trailer that drives to each pageant and provides lights and sound equipment. The lights and sounds guy for the Mesa Easter pageant is a local electrician who loves doing this work. He always takes the entire month off as vacation and does their light and sound. Those towers, they're just as tall as you think. This is clear OSHA-controlled territory, and safety harnesses and everything you can imagine are involved. As a cast member, yeah, there's not a snowball's chance in Phoenix they're going to let you climb on those towers, not even for fun. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the recording. This is the Roman Guard. It's actually a cousin of mine who's wearing that. they record the dialogue, and the author of the pageant cited, okay, Roman guards, they're from Italy, so let's give them an Italian accent. So he sounds like he is an extra in The Godfather. All right, let's see if I got this queued up.
You are followers of Jesus of Nazareth.
And then the Midwestern
yes,
woman replies.
Yes, we are followers of Jesus Christ.
Please, do not be afraid. I am only interested in learning the truth about this Jesus.
All right, so my wife would always poke me in the rib. Stop laughing. But yeah, they just had that. I guess I can't blame them, but I mean, usually the bad guys in movies will have Queen's English, British accents. He did not. It was Italian. It was pretty funny. Well, let's talk about the apostles next. There are 12 apostles. No surprise, coming from the LDS Church. Peter has the most speaking parts, and Judas has his fun role to play. Judas is the guy there in kind of in the middle in the red. That gentleman right there went on to play one of the apostles in one of the 2013 endowment movies. It's the one with the bald Satan, if you get your hands on a copy, let's just say. But those are they spent a lot of time with Jesus, of course. And then there's the bad guys. These are fun to play. That's Pontius Pilate up there. He's actually portrayed pretty kindly. They don't portray him as a bad guy. He's just like a guy who was caught up in all the silliness that these crazy Jews were involved in. And then there's the Sadducees and the Pharisees, who are tired of this crazy Jewish upstart that's showing up. The Roman guards are a crowd favorite. They get to go out in the audience also, and little boys are constantly running up to them and trying to draw their swords, which are real swords. I mean, they're blunted on the edge, but the end is pointy, and they've got spears, but they're hugely popular. I got to play a Sadducee in a couple different years. This, unfortunately, is not me. I would have been just off to the left of this guy. It's a lot of fun. You wear these awesome pimp-tastic outfits, and you get to have a bad attitude every time you're on stage. You wear this assortment of gaudy rings, to let all the Jewish peasants know you're far too wealthy to deal with this foolish, crazy Jewish mystic that they're following. I was in teaching primary at the time, and my primary kids would constantly wag their finger at me for being the bad guy. Little did they know. My job on stage was to stand around defiantly and scowl at Jesus. This is not an over. This is entirely what I was told for stage direction, particularly when all those peasant rubes are worshiping him. So this is a scene in the middle of the pageant. This is called Healing and Teaching. The text of it is the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, set to music. Jesus is raising the son of the widow of Nain. Later he heals a blind man, gives him his sight, and it's a very touching scene. And then suddenly, halfway through the scene, the Sadducees run on stage with the woman taken in adultery. Now, I have to say, Jesus dissolves divine miracles, and then he doesn't show anything when the Pharisees come on stage. Perhaps they'd felt differently if they'd come on just a few seconds earlier. But at this point, everyone on stage, except for the Sadducees, is just excited by Jesus, and they're in this attitude of kneeling, hands towards him, but not the Sadducees. They're supposed to stand in the back, hands on their hips, shaking their head at this crazy Jewish mystic who's messing up their livelihood. So, it's fun. The Sadducees seriously get to scowl at Jesus. If you're going through a faith crisis, it's kind of cathartic. Right. Let's talk a little more about John the Baptist. When the scene opens, he is generally baptizing a woman with long hair. My wife played this part a few years ago, and the stage direction is pretend you're in a shampoo commercial. Let's make that hair dramatic, squeeze it out like you just put on the best shampoo ever. And then as she walks away to the stage exit, a woman who's known as the Relief Society president puts a towel around her, and she goes off and she has a tent to change in and to dry clothes in the back. Well, this leads to one of the very practical effects of the pageant. Jesus, the main Jesus, comes out and has the main dialogue, "It is I, these be baptized of you," as John the Baptist says. And John lowers main Jesus behind the front of the stage. You can see where those plants are right here. This is the edge. Behind there, there's a coffin-shaped tub of water. Underneath the stage, there's a water heater so that the guy who's being baptized doesn't have hypothermia when he gets out. So John lowers main Jesus and picks up baptized Jesus out of the tub of water. So at that point, main Jesus hops down off this platform and runs around for the next scene. Well, a few years ago, there was an amusing problem they had. Main Jesus is getting off the platform, and he was blocked by this crowd who were just standing there. Watch the swapping of the messiahs. And it wasn't just any actors either. It was a dozen teenage girls waiting to see strapping young teenage baptized Jesus. They got this 18-year-old kid who, correct size, 5'10", grew a wicked beard, leaving on his mission literally 2 weeks after the end of the pageant, and he clearly had lettered in varsity football in high school. He was an attractive young man, according to the dozen teenage girls who were waiting to see him rising, dripping wet out of a tub of water every evening. And he would go by, try not to high-five them too much because of it. And the young women were kindly admonished to please stop ogling the dripping wet Messiah and get in place for the next big group scene. I really have to give this young man some credit. Whenever he'd go out to visit the crowd, he always had a girl in each arm. It was absolutely hilarious. All right, let's talk about for the finale. You can see at the very top, there's Jesus rising in the air, and he's surrounded by angels. A large spotlight shines on him. It's an impressive effect. There's a song playing. The cast is as their hands towards him. This is the final image of the play. So this is up on top of the stage. This is called the angel stage. And it's really hard to see, but he's actually standing on a long hydraulic arm that just lifts him up in the air like this. It's got a stabilizer on it. He's strapped into, and they put his robe over it. I've talked to the actor who plays Jesus a couple times about this, and he says, you can't see much. It's completely black above you. The brightest spotlights are shining on you. You can barely see anything in front of you. If it's windy, it's pants-wetting terror, because you're standing up like this and trying not to turn that white suit yellow in the front because it's kind of frightening. But it's quite the effect. This did lead to one rather interesting and arguably one of the most faith-promoting stories I've heard from the pageant. One evening, a local citizen with several outstanding arrest warrants was driving down Main Street in Mesa. He's driving eastbound at 9:05 p.m. precisely, and in his rearview mirror, he sees Jesus. Now, it's not some random bearded hobo on the side of the street. This is rising in the air, Jesus shining. It's the second coming. There's angels all around him. And this was his literally come to Jesus moment. So after the initial panic, he did a little research, and it wasn't hard to find advertising the Easter pageant. So when his heartbeat went below 100 beats per minute, he decided he was actually going to go see the pageant the next night. And he did, and apparently he was kind of touched. He talked to a couple of people and found out, yeah, anyone can try out in October. So he did. And he was invited to be one of the centurions in the pageant. He's a large, imposing fellow. He's Hispanic, so he looks more Mediterranean than any of the other centurions on stage. All look like they're from Kansas. So he's made a number of other positive improvements in his life. He's actually a really nice guy. Unfortunately, not all the members of the cast treat Jesus with that kind of deference. This is the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Jesus is on a donkey. It's the beginning of Holy Week. It's Palm Sunday. And this is an actual donkey owned by a local rancher. Actual animals are used in the nativity scene, the opening street scene, and the triumphal entry, the birth of Jesus with the shepherds in the field. I have a really good friend who is a large animal vet. He does dairy cows most of the time, but he's actually on call as well as been in the pageant a couple times as the immediate veterinarian if something happens. There are also some white doves that are released at the baptism, and they're trained just to fly back to their coop in Mesa, so they just let them go, and it's the Holy Ghost descending like a dove. Well, one year, we had a donkey named Snickers. Snickers didn't like Jesus. He may not have been a theist. Jesus is led out in front of the grass, and then up this ramp, you can see him coming up. And one evening, we don't know why, but it made the crowds, the noise, the lights, the palm fronds waving. Snickers bucked Jesus off in the middle of a performance. Now, I was standing on stage, And I'm looking at this just surreal scene while Jesus tries to, with all his much decorum as he can, get up and walk behind Snickers. He's not getting back on. But he made it over the ramp walking behind him. Since Jesus didn't go the full 10 seconds in that rodeo, they decided not to have him continue ride the donkey for the rest of that season. And the next year, a very new and old nag, docile donkey was used for the triumphal entry. All right, the three big crowd scenes are healing and teaching, triumphal entry, and the finale. They pull everyone out of stage in the grass areas on front. Most of the 500 actors also have individual scenes. All the speaking parts on music are pre-recorded, so they want you to, rather than, you're supposed to speak the words just anyway, not to expect anyone to hear you, but they want to see your mouth move. They want big arm movements, particularly to the side, to indicate that you're talking, that something is going on. Two of the critical backstage cast members are the people that open and close the gates on either side, on the north and south side. These people are some of the most experienced members of the pageant because they have to open the gates at exactly the right time, open and close them, because that's the difference between a triumphal crowd scene and a pathetic gathering for people who just seem to be Jewish. Well, if you're age 17 or above and a male, there is one final crowd scene, and this is the arrest of Jesus. It's a strange scene to have to practice, because when you show up for the practice, the director says, okay, I know all of you are good members of the church, you're Christians, you love Jesus, but this evening you have to practice being mean to Jesus. I know you wouldn't do this in real life, but you have to practice being mean to Jesus. You're told to stand behind him, yell like, crucify him, shake your fists. There's a bin of conveniently placed mob weapons on either side of the ramps going up the stage to grab, to shake at him. And it's a well-choreographed scene. It looks like chaos at times. It's supposed to. And this does include this torch-carrying mob scene of people that run up on stage and as when they're actually arresting Jesus. Seriously, you can yell anything you want at Jesus. It's more than 100 men yelling at him, and no matter what's your actual testimony of Jesus, you're encouraged to yell at him. I have some friends who took this as therapy and when stood behind Jesus yelling about the finer points of the universal problem of evil, some vulgarity may or may not have ensued. The actor playing Jesus is in no position to react to you. You are the angry mob. It's possible to get a little too into it. One of my friends was on stage one evening in performance. He's shaking his fist and accidentally hits the guy in the face next to him. He started bleeding from his nose, just streaming down his face. And so we immediately went from yelling, crucify him, to, are you going to be okay? We'll get that checked out after this scene. I don't think either the savior or the rest of the crowd was aware that this had transpired, but I assure you, authenticity was at an all-time high. The last part of this scene is Jesus being scourged. This is he actually has a tearaway costume that one of the guards scourging him will pull down the back of his costume, and it looks like he's got blood streaming from the back of his costume. It's pretty dramatic. And it's full of dramatic music and crowd choreography. We definitely have the scene with Judas getting asked to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. It's 30 pieces of plastic pirate treasure you can buy at Halloween, but that's what he does do. I asked this actor, like, do you actually go out on the finale? I mean, you're the last time the crowd saw you were betraying Jesus. Or did you come out in the finale? He says, yes, I do. He says that when I'm on stage as Judas Iscariot, I'm there to betray the Savior. But at the very last scene, I'm coming out as me, who just happens to be dressed as Judas Iscariot. Truly, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus is the Christ in the Mesa Easter pageant. And that does include all the Sadducees, all the Pharisees, the Roman guards, Pontius Pilate. There have been a couple of actors playing Judas who ran off stage, just burst into tears, right at the end of after he's tossed his 30 pieces of silver and run away. But it's always a dramatic part for that actor. There's one major deleted scene, and that would, obviously I don't have a picture of it, as of course, but they recreate this, Jesus visiting the Nephites after the resurrection. This was removed in the late 80s and early 1990s. I certainly remember seeing it a couple times when I was a teenager coming down to see it. I have a friend who played one of the Nephite young men during the scene and when near his father was actually playing Jesus. Apparently, the pageant presidency got some audience feedback after a poll, and the non-LDS attendees weren't a big fan of this scene for reasons I think we can all imagine. They really liked the Christian Passion play, but the temple presidency and the pageant presidency decided it was probably best to remove this scene because it was turning people off to the whole Easter pageant to begin with. I do want to emphasize that the Christian community in the Phoenix area does enjoy the Easter pageant for the most part. The retirement community will send buses of people to attend a couple nights. Phoenix and Mesa have a large population of snowbird retirees, and this is normally the last event they will attend before they head north to something more hospitable than a Phoenix summer. So people from all over North America have ended up seeing the pageant. Local religious and political leaders are always invited. There certainly is a missionary presence, but the LDS Church is mostly focused on the life of Jesus in this pageant. Catholics, Protestants, and most of the easygoing evangelicals do attend. Some of the not-so-easygoing evangelicals are known to attend. There are always protesters, and I've talked to them. You're not allowed to talk to them if you're in the cast. You're told to just stay away from them, don't talk to them at all. But on the years that I haven't been in the cast, I have gone and chatted with these guys. They're kind of boring, really. He's certainly fervent about what he's yelling in that megaphone. By the way, that Arby's you can see behind him, that was unofficially known as where if you were traveling to the Mesa Temple with a bunch of youth to do baptisms for the dead, you always stopped at that Arby's to change into church clothes because it's right across the street from the temple. It's since been torn down. The church bought that area. They're expanding it, the temple grounds. But it certainly had a history. Mesa police is always on hand to help with crowds. They actually passed a special noise ordinance in Mesa that gives police the jurisdiction to shut down noisier protesters once the pageant itself starts. They can yell anything they want before it starts, but once 8 p.m. starts, police can arrest them and pull them aside because they don't want to disrupt the pageant. In exchange, the church and temple grounds fully acknowledge that there is a 10 p.m. noise court curfew so that the surrounding neighborhoods can get some sleep, because there's houses right across the street over to the west and the south. So it's a bit of a disruption for their lives for about a month. The seating, however, is good, and it's open pretty much all day long. Unfortunately, this means that parking is really bad, and that's one of the things that is being improved with new changes to the temple grounds. People bring tons of food with them. There's 12,000 metal chairs from local state centers. The church actually purchased these special garbage cans that are square, about this big, so they're big enough to hold a Little Caesars pizza box, because people will bring dozens of Little Caesars pizza, $5. You're bringing the young men's group, you're bringing your kids, your grandkids, you pick up a Little Caesars pizza. It's cheap, it's $5, and there's a waste bin that's just big enough for the box when you get to the temple grounds. One example, the continuing support the pageant is getting is the grounds are being redesigned. The stage is currently on the west side, and they're moving it over to the east so that when the audience is waiting for the show to start, in the afternoon, the sun will be at your back instead of in your face. Kind of a nice touch. The Easter pageant is not a historical review of first century Judea, and it's not even a bastion of old school LDS doctrine. Historicity and objective truth is not the goal of the Easter pageant. It's all about an idealized version of Christianity and of Jesus. And it's also one of the most ecumenical programs that the LDS Church supports. Local Christian churches do recommend this pageant to many of their congregations. There is a Spanish night that they hold. This is one of the most heavily attended nights. The demographic of the Spanish people in the Phoenix area are Catholic, and they love the Easter pageant. The English version of the pageant is actually broadcast behind the stage so that we know what our cues are for getting on stage. Rain has been known to keep crowds away, but on Spanish night, the crowd is capacity, even if it's raining. There's a Mesa City Park just to the north across Main Street, and there's always, on Spanish night, they have a party, there's music, there's food vendors, and then they all walk across the street to watch the Passion play. So, if you're an active member of the church, I can recommend that you bring your friends, family, relatives, neighbors to the Easter pageant. Young men and young women groups come all the time. You could easily go away from the performance without ever being directed to LDS missionaries. You can see them. They're always talking to somebody. It doesn't have to be you. If you have trouble keeping children reverent in church, the Easter pageant is a much easier event to attend. You can bring a full picnic dinner and blankets and camp chairs and iPads to keep everybody entertained until the show starts. There is a flagpole, as you can see, flag to the left side of where the temple is, and that is the official Lost Child Station. But suppose, at some level, that you are going through some level of faith crisis or faith transition, may I recommend that in some ways this is the least Mormon thing that the LDS Church supports. It's the same length as sacrament meeting, but there are fewer prayers, there's only one, and you will not be shushed for reverence before and after the show. It's almost neutral ground if you want to experience something with believing friends and family. If you have retained a belief in Christianity, it's still pretty easy to embrace, even if the doctrine is not much above the average children's Sunday school. It's an idealized version of Jesus, where the Sermon on the Mount is put to music and the song Love One Another is played during the Last Supper. If you have no belief in God, the pageant is simply the best versions of the core beliefs and ethics of Christianity embodied in a man who took on the entrenched religious and political powers of his day and then lost. The Easter pageant is a very human endeavor, trying to present the divine for mass appeal. In some seeming opposition to the wide appeal of the Mesa pageant, we have had the announcement that many of the other church pageants are being canceled. Manti, Clarkston, Castle Valley, and Palmyra are all ended or ending next year. It would not surprise me if some of the local congregations kept some of them alive to some extent without the overt Salt Lake City church support, but that's, I'm sure, very much up in the air. I'll bet you local congregation in Manti are most likely to actually have that happen. The two Nauvoo pageants, one of the British pageants, and Mesa will be continuing. The key to why the Mesa pageant is continuing is that this is pretty much the stage version of comeuntochrist.org. It's the missionary outreach website. If you Google Mormon Church, this is the website that comes up. This is literally how the church wants to introduce themselves to people generally. It's a concentration solely on the life of Christ. Makes Mesa align with this effort. Mesa aligns with this effort to make the church more reflected in basic teachings of Christianity. This is going to be a paradox for the LDS Church going forward as they balance their desire to be called Christian with their old school wish to also be the one true church with prophets, temples, priesthood authority, and the Book of Mormon. I'm sure that the tension between these camps will be around for a very long time. So the Easter pageant is continuing. It's on hiatus in 2019 and 2020 because of extensive renovation of the temple grounds, but there are firm plans to restart the pageant in 2021. Tryouts will be held in October 2020, and the next performance will be March 23rd, 2021 at 8 p.m. Come early for good seats. Thank you. And if you have any questions about it, I'd be happy to answer that, or please.
You want a comfortable microphone?
Yeah. Well, they'll probably want that.
What's behind the discontinuance of the other pageants?
Yeah, this is a question with a lot more rumor than I can talk about. I do know that there part of the rumor was that the church wanted to present their image in a bit more updated view of things. The Manti pageant has a script which has not changed since 1967. It reads like an old 1960s church missionary movie, which made sense back during the Johnson and Nixon administration, but not so much now. The church had gone to the heads of the pageant and asked them politely if they could change the script to certain parts, and apparently negotiations broke down, and the Manti said, we really don't want to do that, and so the church says, well, we're not going to support it directly. This is a rumor. I have no way to know for sure how this actually turned out. I think the other part of the rumor is that they were cutting part of some of the pageants because they were really just attracting more Mormons. They're preaching to the converted already. Non-LDS really don't care about the origin of the Book of Mormon in Palmyra or the church and the translation of the Book of Mormon and Book of Mormon scenes in Manti. The Nauvoo pageant is a little more history-oriented. The Nauvoo, if you go there, they're really focused on history and family history and genealogy. Certainly they push the Book of Mormon a bit and the Prophet Joseph Smith, although they're a little short on material claims for why the Joseph Smith is a prophet. But they do focus on the history of the people as a very personal endeavor. So I think that's one of the reasons why they have more control over it. The church obviously has a huge infrastructure in Nauvoo itself. My in-laws are actually there on a mission right now, and they just had their pageant a few weeks ago. I think it's a level of control as well as message that the church wants to be presenting to the world. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any further in the future, and thank you for coming to my presentation today. Thanks.